Welcome back in, Mad Radio, alongside Wade Smith and Travis Johnson. I'm Jeremy Branham. Austin Mendez behind the glass doing all the heavy lifting. 713-572-4610. The number to text or call, 713-572-4610. Deontay Foreman was on In the Loop 2 days ago. You guys were filling in the Loop whenever Deontay Foreman was coming in. The Texans are in a situation to where I feel like the running backs are being underrated from national media. I feel like locally the Texans and people realize what the Texans have the potential of having from that running back duo, but nationally it's being slept on a little bit. There are some weaknesses I'll get into later about that running back room that I think you have some pretty big red flags. But first and foremost, when you have Lamar Miller, who was an All-Pro last year, I understand he was an All-Pro reserve.
Pro Bowl, not All-Pro.
He was a Pro Bowler, and he was an alternate Pro Bowler, but he was still a Pro Bowler and had a productive season. Probably the most productive season he's had as a Houston Texan. He came just shy of the 1,000-yard mark, and he did that in 14 games because he missed 2 games during the regular season. And let's keep in mind that last year, Lamar Miller was backed up by Alfred Blue. Who was the guy helping Lamar Miller? Who was the guy keeping Lamar Miller fresh? There wasn't one because Lamar Miller had to be the bell cow because the Texans had very little behind him. Now you have Deontay Foreman coming back, and he's coming off a torn Achilles, but he played a little bit last year. We saw him at least get back on the football field a year ago, which I think went a long way. 2 seasons ago in 2017, we saw the spark he could provide late in the season. I believe he's more motivated than ever. I feel like he's been humbled a bit by this injury and coming back out of shape, or at least not in the shape that the coaches wanted him in. I feel like he's changed his mentality. I feel like he's matured. And a lot of times the mental game is just as important as the physical game in the NFL. So I love this two-headed monster that the Houston Texans have. You have Miller, who's a borderline Pro Bowler in the AFC, and now you have a guy behind him who can take some off the plate of Lamar Miller and provide somebody who's a change of pace and can just help out the Houston Texans offense.
Yeah, like you mentioned it, you know, we interviewed him yesterday on In the Loop with Landry, who's myself and Trap.
Yesterday, the day before.
Oh, the day before yesterday. Yesterday was the last time we were on the radio station.
Over there, yeah.
I just super specific over there, but the last time that y'all heard Sports Radio 610,
I was just like, were we in here?
Nah, we weren't
my
here.
My days
yesterday.
Are running together.
Get too much vino.
But when we talked to him, you know, one thing that he really struck me with is he exuded a lot of confidence. And a lot of times when you got guys that are coming off of significant injuries like that, Achilles, you know that, you know, it's tough for them to get over that hump of having that confidence of like, yeah, I'm me again. And it struck me in that interview that he has that confidence. And so I think if you have a Foreman going at 100%, I think Foreman by the end of the season, he's probably going to end up being the number one running back. And if you have him taking more carries than Lamar Miller, I think that the running back room is definitely underrated, because I think that overall, if you have those two guys, that's going to be one of the top, let's say, top 10 tandems in the NFL at the running back position, and nobody would say that going into this season.
Right. I heard that interview too, and that was my biggest takeaway with Foreman, was that he sounded more mature, he sounded humbled. I thought that was more important than the actual physical side of things that we saw last year. Here's Foreman on what he went through last season, then talking to the head coach, Bill O'Brien.
Being a guy that get injured as a rookie, and then not playing the whole season, and then, you know, going into your second year not playing, and everything at this point is just mental and stuff that you haven't been through. Like I said before, I had a lot of up and downs, man. You know, a lot of things that, you know, I didn't feel like were going my way. A lot of things that, you know, I couldn't control. But, you know, also being young, it was a lot of things that I didn't understand, you know, with having this injury and all the little details that goes into, you know, getting back. You know, I would do things that, you know, wasn't supposed to do. Not like really in a bad way, but just not, you know, being an all around pro, you know, just not taking it all the way serious. And, you know, it got to the point to where, you know, I just felt like, you know, I just started feeling energy like, man, you know, maybe I just feel like something wasn't right. You know, I just had to go up there and, you know, just hold a conversation with him and just let him know, you know, how serious I was about being a Houston Texan. And
I think that was good foresight by Foreman. And it really also, there's two takeaways I had from that soundbite. One, I think it shows good maturity that he was able to go to Bill O'Brien and say, look, this is where I failed you in my first 2 years as an NFL pro, and this is where I want to be for the rest of my career. I think having that epiphany for Deontay Foreman is going to go a long way. And it also validates what we thought was true in his first 2 years as a pro, as somebody who's not really handling himself like a pro. He's not going about it from a business sense. he's not doing what is necessary to really put himself in a good light in front of the head coaches. So it validates that thought that everybody's had for the first 2 years of his career, but it also shows great maturity that he can have a conversation with his head coach and say, look, I need to turn it around. This is what I'm going to give you. I think it's going to go a long way.
No question. I think that was probably the biggest takeaway I got, was the fact that he just sounded so mature and sounded so grounded. You know, and I think for him, it's harder than a lot of other going into third year guys, especially running back. The man grew up here. The man lived here. He's from here. It's easy to get away from who you are and really that real person being home all the time. And everybody, how many yes men you think he got in his corner? It seems like he don't have any, for the simple fact is the attitude he came with. He don't have a guy. He has people telling him, hey man, you gotta do better. And I think that's what was profound to me, was just the way he carried himself. I think the way he carried himself, it seems like he's starting to carry himself like a pro. Like he's starting to self-evaluate self and self-scout. He self-scouted the mess out of himself.
You know, I think you make a great point when you say he self-evaluated. When you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, like, you know what, I'm not handling my business the way I need to. And you know what, I feel like that the coaching staff here is seeing that as well. Let me go approach the head man and talk to him and let him know kind of where I'm at and where I want to be. It reminds me of a situation a few years back when Brandon Brooks going into his, I think it was his second year, he hits me up out the blue. He's like, hey, wait, I need to come through and talk to you. I need to holler at you. I'm like, all right, well, I'm at the crib. So he comes by to the crib. I'm thinking, you know, it's something where, you know, he got a situation where it's a chick that he might have got pregnant or something. It's something crazy, something like that. You never know what goes on with these young boys. Because he was like going into his second year. And I'm thinking it's something like that. He comes to my house and he's like, hey, man, I want to learn from you guys. I want to learn from you and Chris and Dwayne, because I want to be great. And I want to study you guys and I want you guys to help bring me along. And when he said that to me, I said, man, this kid is going to be a problem, because he self-evaluated himself. He saw that, you know, he saw some people around him that he felt like that he can emulate and incorporate into his game, and he wanted to be great. And you've seen what's happened since then. You know what I mean? He's gone to multiple Pro Bowls, been all pro. And so that, if you can get some of the same production, and that was just on a, you know, teammate to teammate thing. I think it's something to be said that you might even give him more credit because you went to talk to the head coach. You know what I mean? Because, you know, a lot of times the relationship between players and coaches isn't ideal, you know what I mean? And sometimes it's just like, he's the coach and I'm the player. And I think that he should be commended for doing that, and hopefully it pays dividends on the field.
Look, I'm not calling for Deontay Foreman that he's going to have like this 1,000-yard season, because it's still very much going to be a work share with he and Lamar Miller. He's got a good running back in front of him, but the combination of the two, I think, will go a long way for the Texans offense. And I think we'll give Bill O'Brien tremendous options going forward. So I think the Texans running backs are overrated. Jack's on the line, 713-572-4610. Jack, you might be thinking that the Texans running backs aren't posed to have a good year in 2019.
Well, I sure hope they do, but I think you could have Barry Sanders and Adrian Peterson back there, and if you've got the fourth or fifth worst offensive line in the NFL, how good are they going to be? What have you all heard about the most important improvement that the Texans could make on the offseason? What's happened?
Appreciate the call, Jack. Thanks for listening. And we'll get into the hog mollies of the Houston Texans at 6:40 as we take a look at our positional breakdown, as the Texans are 20 days till camp. I'll say this. I don't expect the offensive line to be worse than it was last year. The Texans' offensive line was terrible last season. It was terrible 2 years ago. They've invested in this offensive line. It might not be the investment that some thought that they should make. They signed Matt Khalil. Who knows when he'll get on the football field. They also spent two of their first two picks on offensive linemen, their first two-round picks. As they drafted Titus Howard, they drafted Max Sharping. You might say, well, they reached for both of them, but they still have invested some pieces to fixing that offensive line, whether it's the money on Matt Khalil, whether it's the draft pick capital in Titus Howard and Max Sharping. You also have to figure that you're going to get some development from your younger players, Julian Davenport, Martinez Rankin. Do those guys get better? I expect the offensive line not to be, you know, top 15 in the league, but I expect them to improve from last year. Let's keep in mind, Lamar Miller ran for nearly 1,000 yards in 14 games behind an offensive line that I felt a year ago in 2018 was an offensive line worse than it will be in 2019.
Well, I think that Jack makes a great point when he calls in and he says that it doesn't matter what running back you put behind the line. If the line doesn't perform to a certain level, the running back position is not going to be productive. I think that's a great point. Probably every year up until maybe like 3-4 years ago in the NFL, I think that the league has kind of changed a little bit to where if you spread teams out the way teams are doing now and running zone reads and stuff like that, your offensive line does not have to be great. It doesn't even have to be like really damn good for you to have production from the running back position. I think just like you said, last year Lamar Miller had around 1,000 yards,
yeah,
and he didn't have a line in front of him that you would say, yeah, he's going to have a 1,000-yard a group. So I think the difference is that if you have a good offensive line, that puts you in the conversation for actually winning something significant. If you have a bad offensive line, it will eliminate you from winning something significant. And so that's the slight difference. And so that's what you would hope that the offensive line can improve enough to where they're pretty good. Just be pretty good. Because if you're pretty good up front, then you can win significant ball games. But if you're what you put out there last year, it's not going to happen.
I totally agree. You know, and it's funny, it's saying Lamar Miller almost had 1,000 yards. And I wonder, you remember how Barry Sanders was back in the day? Definitely not saying Lamar Miller is Barry Sanders. But you remember how bad those offensive lines were?
Man, they had Lomas Brown. Lomas Brown was nice in left tackle.
They had Lomas.
Lomas. Besides that,
that was it. They had Lomas Brown. That was it.
They listen, Barry Sanders stayed making people miss in the backfield because there was so much penetration.
But here was my question,
making people miss. What's up?
If he had a good offensive line, would he have been any good?
Barry Sanders?
Well, Barry,
of course he would have.
No, I'm just saying, like,
of course he would
have. We wouldn't have never got to see that Barry.
Because when he got to the second level, he still was a problem. He got to the second level, making people miss in open
field. But we would have never got to see that Barry with a good offensive line.
That's a hot take. Like, Barry Sanders would not have been the same with a good offensive line.
I'm not saying he wouldn't have been. I'm just asking, like, when you look back at all of Barry Sanders' highlights, when he got to the second level, I see you thinking, because now you're going back to NFL films when we were jitterbugs. All the people he made miss in the background and in the backfield. Yeah. Think about that. Like, his Oklahoma State film was fire. He was hitting the second level every time. But think about how much a part of his highlights and a part of his legacy is making people miss in the background. But he's defensive lineman with fingers throwing up gang signs right now.
No question.
Trying to get hold of him.
Look like my right hand right now. Right hand left. But I think a better question is if you put Emmitt Smith on the Detroit Lions, is he a Hall of Fame running back?
Hall of Fame?
Is he a Hall of Fame running back?
He's a Hall of Famer.
You think he's still a Hall of Fame running back if you put him behind the Detroit Lions offensive line?
I would say so. I don't think he leads the NFL in all-time rushing, but I think he's still a Hall of Famer.
I'm going to say no, bro. I'm going to say no. Like,
so you think Emmitt Smith is 100% product of the system?
I'm not saying that either. I mean, you're saying something when you're telling me a running back is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I'm saying he's a pretty good running back if you just put him behind the Detroit Lions offensive line. You got to look at it like this. When I grew up watching that team. I couldn't stand them, but I grew up watching. And that offensive line, I completely respected them. That offensive line was a problem.
Yeah.
Arguably the best offensive line in the history of the NFL, and it lasted for multiple years. Like, basically the meat of his career, he was running behind, you know, the best in the league. And just imagine, a lot of times he wasn't getting hit until 4 or 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, as opposed to Barry Sanders was getting hit in the backfield. I don't remember watching Emmitt Smith breaking a bunch of tackles in the backfield. Part of that is because there wasn't that many opportunities,
but
he just didn't have that kind of wiggle to him to do that.
In my same breath, would Emmitt been the same back without such a great offensive line?
Not the same.
I don't believe Emmitt Smith is all time great.
But that's my point. If you put him behind Detroit Lions offensive line, he's not a Hall of Famer.
He's not at all.
One thing that I think will help the Texans running back tandem of Lamar Miller and Deontay Foreman, a healthy Will Fuller and a healthy Kiki QT, because now you're looking at Lamar Miller and Deontay Foreman as third, fourth, fifth options for the offense, and, you know, not a heavy box, a little better opportunity for them to run against some better numbers.
Yeah, that is going to be a huge deal as far as the run game for the Texans is having Kiki QT there for having a healthy season as well as Will Fuller, because it opens everything up. It makes those boxes like 6 and 7 man boxes at worst. They're never going to have 8 in a box if you have all those skilled position players that are outside that's pulling defenders out of the box. And so now you have one-on-one blocking and one-on-one a running back versus a linebacker. And you have to – any running back worth the salt is supposed to win that battle. And so, you know, that's a big deal. If those guys are not healthy this year, I think that the offense overall for the Texans is going to suffer tremendously. So that, I mean, if you're a Texans fan out there, you need to be praying to whoever you pray to each and every day is that those guys stay healthy throughout the year. I think those are the two biggest keys on for what the offense does this year is Will Fuller's health and Kiki QT's health.
All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at the hog mollies for the Houston Texans. 20 days until training camp. How's it shaping up on the offensive defensive line with our offensive lineman, Wade Smith, with our defensive lineman, Travis Johnson? I'm Jeremy Brandon. We do it next. Mad Radio, Sports Radio 610.